I'll just step out. You know, get me when you're ready. You don't talk to me first.
Okay.
I don't think you need to leave. Just don't talk.
I understand. I can do that.
Would you see if you could round everybody up? Tell them we're kind of in a hurry.
So the budget discussion is commencing now?
Yeah.
As opposed to this?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's later on the agenda.
Okay. All right.
Right. That is confusing, but yeah.
Sorry.
What
all
do
right.
you think?
I don't think I should participate in the discussion about whether we should or shouldn't. I can answer factual questions about what I do or don't do, if that's an issue. But I don't think I should be involved. Does that make sense?
Okay, we're ready for the budget discussion.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, here we are.
We
have you're
two off. More votes.
Yeah. Huh?
Two more visitors.
Well, yeah. I assume they don't want to speak.
I'd like to know who they are.
I don't even have a list. I don't have a roster.
Laura, is it the two ladies who just joined?
I'm not sure because I take it at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Especially if one's a reporter.
Yeah.
She is.
Okay. Okay, we're ready to move into the budget discussion, but what I'd like to do is, this is second reading, is I know Ron's got a question, rather than go through the budget page by page, is first just see if there are any issues board members want to talk about within it, you know, because we've been through it one time.
Can I highlight the changes?
Okay.
Okay,
so Ron.
Well, the at our first reading approval, that approval was contingent on us revisiting the issue of changing from out-of-house counsel to in-house legal counsel. And because I believe that is a that is not a staffing issue, that is a policy issue. I think it is something that the board should decide on, whether philosophically we're ready to do that or not, because it's more to that than just hiring a person that has a legal background and has passed the board, passed the bar. In fact, even that is a question. Is passing the bar critical for this position? But my main issue is I think it represents a substantial change, strategic change for the district, and therefore it is a policy issue that the board should decide on separately from approving or not approving the budget. And if the other board members don't agree with that, or if you're comfortable with that, then that's a whole another issue. We just take it up as part of the budget consideration. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do. You're saying you'd rather discuss this outside the context of the budget?
I think there are two ways this could be approached. One is for us to decide whether or not we want to move ahead with hiring legal counsel instead of contracting legal counsel as we currently do. If we support hiring legal counsel, we also recognize, based on our previous conversation, that involves also continuing to contract legal counsel. Hiring legal counsel does not eliminate our need to contract legal counsel, because we will need legal counsel specific to the issues that are being litigated. And so the budget has to be analyzed, that budget item has to be analyzed very differently. Now, if we decide, one of my issues with contracting with making this change now is the fact that we're making leadership change now. And we are making a substantial strategic decision without prematurely.
Okay, I'm not trying to interrupt you. I think you've almost asked kind of for a ruling on is what you're talking about germane to the discussion we're having on the budget. Am I wrong about that? Because I was going to comment on that.
I don't know if I understand the question, so go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is I do think that under the Carver model of governance, that the budget discussion is the place where the board can legitimately get into some of these issues that kind of straddle the line of staffing and philosophy. In other words,
and we don't disagree on that.
If you were looking for a ruling of what you want to talk about within what we're supposed to be discussing, I'm saying, yeah, to me that's a legitimate thing to raise in the context of the budget. The budget brings up those kinds of opportunities that we normally wouldn't, I think, legitimately have.
And really what I wasn't asking for a ruling on that because I agree with what you said wholeheartedly,
okay.
Which is rare. But
okay, I just want to make sure.
But what I'm saying is there are two ways of approaching it. We can approach that issue and address that issue, or we can look at the budget and analyze the budget as if that issue is a foregone conclusion.
I guess we could do either. I don't think what you're suggesting you would like to do is inappropriate.
Okay.
And now, Wayne.
Okay, yeah, just to clarify, when I met with Don to start with, I said I would make every decision like I was going to be here for the next 10 years. So that was why I put this in. It was discussed with the staff. But I want to make sure we understand this is not a change in the philosophical outsourcing of major legal issues. We've even added to the budget in that regard. I think that will continue for as long as this district's here. There'll be major issues. What I was proposing is what I think Reese summed it up last time, kind of a small ball attorney. We're now dealing with each charter is a contract. Each school now signs a contract. Each EMO school has a contract that we need to evaluate. We're dealing with, for lack of a better term, Obamacare now is coming in, so we're having major issues. There are a lot of little things that I just thought we really needed. It would be great if we could say our legal person has looked at these contracts without sending it out to a much more expensive attorney with some of the little things we're dealing with. This is replacing a staff position that we had previously, so it's not adding a staff member. It's the staff person would not report to the superintendent, but would be part of the compliance position. So, but I do agree with Ron. We're in the midst of a leadership change, and this is not one that I'm willing to die on my sword for, but at the same time, I wouldn't have made this had I not thought it was the best thing for the district in the long term. So that's my comment.
Here's my other issue from a board perspective, and it's an issue that it's interesting because I had. In every superintendent role I had in-house legal counsel. And so in defense of Wayne, I understand exactly where he's coming from. Now, it's also accurate to say many school districts in the state do not have in-house legal counsel, and they have all these same issues. They do not have, Betty, did you have, I won't say most because I don't know the numbers. Many school districts in this state do not have in-house legal counsel. Now, The thing that I've advised other boards on is they need to be very deliberate when they move in this direction, because whether staff realize it or whether the board realize it or not, in-house, one of the most critical questions that the legal counsel has to answer is, who is my client? The reality is, the client is not the superintendent. The client is the district, and the board represents the district. So when we make this change, I think it has to be very deliberate so that there's some orientation to staff, orientation to the superintendent even, that in-house, that all legal counsel that is charged with legally representing, providing legal advice and representation, their client is not the superintendent. The client is not the staff. The client is the board. And so that's why I keep saying this is a policy issue. It's not a staffing issue. You see, all other staff in the district work for the superintendent, not for the board. The staff in this room, they don't work for us. They work for the superintendent, and we hold the superintendent responsible for their actions. I just want to caution you that this is not just a staffing issue, but we're approaching it as if it were a staffing issue because it's buried in the budget. And it was buried in the budget in a way that was not adequate. That budget that we first received on first reading, it was not adequate to cover this because it assumes that there's going to be a deferral of cost, and there's not. We will have the cost we now have, and we'll have the cost of this office. So I've made my point. That's the I will stop there.
Well, do you have a motion to make?
I move. I can make a motion.
Well, I'm not. I'm just. Do you? I'm not asking. We've discussed it. I'm just wondering if there's something you want to propose that we do to the budget related to your discussion or not?
Well, your ruling made it very difficult to do that because my motion would have to be directed to the budget. My intent is directed to this position. I do not believe this position should be a position that's brought into the district. So how do I do that within the context of the budget discussion?
I meant for my ruling, if you wanted to do that, to facilitate that, and that you could make a motion to amend the budget if you want to do that.
I would move that we amend the budget to anticipate legal cost at the appropriate level of our currently increased litigation using our current model of legal representation.
Where is that in the budget? I'm trying to get it to a line item.
Well,
page 2.
Page 3. Page 3 is the staff.
Yeah, just so we'll know what we're talking about.
Okay. So that's a portion of it.
Show me where you see legal services on page 2.
Page 2 under board of charter services.
Okay. And that went up from 86 to 130. Am I right?
Well, 86 is actual as of February, but it was okay. It went down.
I'm sorry, it was 200. So I'm sorry. So that went down
to 130.
From 200 to 130. Does everybody see that? I just want to make sure everybody's seeing the same thing.
No, I'm sorry. What line?
This one.
It's
legal services.
It's 319, item
so
319. I mean, all the other numbers.
Line item reduction is essentially transposed to the
to which
line.
To which line
reduction.
Item? Oh. Okay, staff attorney.
Yeah.
Okay.
Essentially.
Right. Yeah. So has everybody got that? Mm-hmm. And that's item 110, 101.
So, Ron, your comments, if I understood correctly, you don't think that the staff attorney position, at whatever salary level it is, will accomplish this transposition? You think we're still going to have a $200,000 outside legal bill by the end of the year?
My position is that the board has never, since legal counsel, if the client for legal counsel is the board and is the district via the board, if that's true, then the board ought to decide how it can be most effectively represented. And we have not done that.
So we put the cart before the horse.
We put the cart before the horse.
But this horse lets us talk about the cart
exactly.
in the context yeah. of the budget.
It right. does, but yeah. in order to fix the cart, I got to kill the horse.
Man, I'm lost now. I don't know which one's which.
Okay, Betty. Well, Betty.
No, I agree with what Ron is saying, and I know exactly where you're coming from. I think that if you had asked for an additional assistant superintendent in the budget and we heard it for the first time, there would not be this discussion. This is a whole different... This is a whole different concept. And because we've dealt with it, so we know what it leads to. So my thoughts are, it would have been nice to have talked about the concept of an in-house staff attorney and what it would look like, what would it mean as far as duties, as far as cost, and quite frankly, I still think there'll be $200,000.
And y'all have some.
And what I'm understanding this position to be is really a help to what is already existing to really understand just what the legal terminology is and stuff like this, because it's going to be more and more. So I understand that. I think I was so taken aback with, bam, here it is, with not a discussion of what should it look like and, you know, how should it play out, because it is taking you to another level when you put on a staff attorney. Because I truly believe, yes, you would use one and you would utilize their from the workday fully, but I still think there will need to be outside counsel. But I just think it's something of such magnitude to find it in the budget as here it is through me for a loop. And I don't know if this is a motion thing. I would just like to see that discussed in depth about more in what it would look like, what it would do, and who would report to. Because I mean that is valid. The attorney is an employee of the board.
I think that's a great idea.
I just think if we could do that outside of the budget, then add it to the budget.
Well, it does seem to me then, and at least the three people have spoken, that at the very least, that staff attorney position, which is in the budget under the Office of Superintendent, whereas legal services is under the office or is under the board for the charter school district. At the very least, that position ought to be moved under the board rather than under the superintendent.
No, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying it should not exist because we haven't determined that.
No, I understand that. What I said was, at the very least, even if we did it, it ought to be in a different position in the budget where all the rest of the legal services is. But that was more of a comment than anything else.
But from what I've heard about the job description and the duties, it doesn't fit there. Under accountability is where the main, I would say, the highest percentage of this person's work time would be spent by a long shot from what I heard.
Absolutely.
I can't think of it. It's the wrong title.
It doesn't matter where the time is going to be spent. That isn't the issue. The issue is who is the client.
Right.
I had an in-house legal counsel, and the instructions they had for me were, if I say something that is improper or give advice to the board that's illegal, you are bound to contradict me and correct that to the board, because that's who you're representing. Mm-hmm. That's the point. Well, anyway,
Okay, but to get back to your motion, you didn't mention...
Well, no. Can I just say one thing? I've not said anything, Don. I just wanted to chime in with one observation,
okay,
if I may. It's an interesting point, Ron, but when you have a general counsel, I've worked with several and actually served in that role a couple of times, but the general rule is the client is the organization. You know, this attorney, a general counsel doesn't work directly for the superintendent. He doesn't work directly for the board. His client is the entity. And so it does create some interesting wrinkles that you have to work through. So I make that observation. I don't think any of us should be under the impression that any attorney that the district hires would work directly for us, because that's really not the case either, no more so than the individual would work directly for the superintendent, directly for Wayne or anybody else, on a personal basis. But I do think your point is valid, that the addition of this individual and figuring out how this individual fits in, I think, does merit discussion beyond just, here's the budget, and by the way, it has a general counsel included. In that regard, I don't disagree with your observation at all. But I do think, we're not going to be able to find somebody who can do everything that Wayne needs to do and necessarily meet all of our individual expectations. I do agree with your point. It's a very good one.
Ron, your motion mentioned appropriate to me. It was vague. It seems to me that for us to take an action on the budget, that the motion needs to say line items and what do you want to happen with those line items. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. I would like to eliminate the line item that supports the... My motion would be to eliminate the line item.
Line item 100-232-110-0001.
Right.
You want to eliminate that?
Right. I want to eliminate the position, so I guess I have to eliminate that line.
The money. In the context. Okay. So your motion, I'm not making sure, I'm not trying to make the motion for you, I'm trying to make sure I understand it, is to eliminate that.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Is there anything else you want in the motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Then is there a second?
Second.
I'm sorry, just for the minute's purpose, is Dr. S. amending his previous motion to now
clarification, restatement, and we don't have to amend it.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. In fact, it's never been seconded now that I think about it. Yeah. Okay.
Second.
You second it. Okay. So the motion is to eliminate line item 100-232-110-0001. Well, that's what I thought. That's the reason I asked if you wanted to do something else with it. We either got to zero that out or move that money. We don't want the money sitting there with the position not there.
If you eliminate the line item, you've eliminated the money.
Well, then they'll...
Then do you add that amount back to the original
right
line item?
Right.
And I don't
know.
That's
not what you
want to do? I want to eliminate that line item.
But did you want to move that money or eliminate the money?
I'm not trying to eliminate the money.
Okay. You're not trying to eliminate the money?
No.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
But could the money not stay under position? Put a position there, let the money stay as a position, but we're not defining what the position is because it's been removed.
Well, let me tell you where I'm really trying to get to. This may be something that is more feasible than what I think, but it could be. Wayne knows that better than I do. I'd like to have an opportunity for us to consider that.
Right. and I think that we do. So we
okay.
put it in as a position, because if it's removed, then my motion would be next is to study the feasibility of an in-house law on staff and counsel, so that it isn't lost, but it would just be more thought put into it. But the position is right. there in the budget, but it's not named.
That's what we would prefer as staff also.
If that would be my, and I don't want to confuse things, Don, but if I could suggest an amendment to Ron, I would suggest that we study the issue and let the staff come to the board with a specific proposal with a specific job description to include the specific items that this staff person would do on a daily basis, and the way that that functionality would integrate into both the board and the leadership of the district. And then if that person needs to be a contract administrator or a general counsel or whatever the case may be, I think then we can make that decision as a board.
Here is the only problem with that, Reese, and that is that presupposes staffing this position. I want to start from a neutral standpoint. What is the best way to deliver? What is the best and most efficient way and effective way of delivering legal services? You know, not to offend the three lawyers in the room, someone asked, why is there so much more litigation? Well, I tell you why there's so much more litigation. There's so many more lawyers. That's why there's so much more litigation. So apologies. but
and by the way, you can't offend attorneys.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, let's start from a neutral position and say, what is the best way of delivering legal services to this district?
But if you leave it, the fact is, we've lost a staff member, and we need to replace the staff member.
Or do we? That's Wayne. Now, that's Wayne's.
Well, yeah.
I can tell you, I'm doing double duty right now.
Yeah. So, but you just put it in the budget as a position to be determined what it should be at a later date. But at least you've got the placeholder there with some money there, and you're just not starting from going back and dispersing it. But you still have open dialogue about.
But what you're saying then is the discussion of what that position will be a board discussion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. See, now I have a problem with that.
Only because it is a whole different philosophical view of being counsel on staff.
No, my position with that is
superintendent.
I mean, trying to see how I articulate this.
While you're thinking of that, I'm going to have to look. Can I give Betty my proxy?
Sure. Yeah. If Wayne, well, actually, in the context of the budget, that's what I have to keep reminding myself. In the context of the budget, we can eliminate anything we want to from the budget or add anything we want to, actually. But it sounds like what you're saying is we're going to put the money there and he can do anything with it he wants to other than in-house counsel. That's what I'm getting out of it.
Well, basically, it's there as a placeholder. I think we all understand that you're a staff short. If it had been the regular, normal staffing of a school district, I don't think it had been an issue. But as I don't want to go back through what Ron has said, but it really is tremendously different.
I understand. I'm just trying to figure out how to.
You really got to think through who is this person reporting to. Yeah. That's all. I just think there's a.
Could I make a recommendation?
Yeah.
What we'd like to see, and we discussed the possibility, we knew this would be an issue. We'd like to see, we'll change this to a staff position. It will not be a staff attorney. It will better reflect some of the same things we're dealing with. The key issue we need. Is with applications to really get the contractual issues, and we think we can do that with. We'd prefer an attorney, but we can do it without an attorney. So it would be similar to the charter initiatives, but we wouldn't call it that. We learned a valuable lesson that one person should not be in charge of that. So we would come up with a staff term that would still report in the compliance area that would not be, because I agree with Betty. Now, I will, in fairness, I drove all the way to Charleston and had lunch with Don to let him know that we were going to add this position. But we didn't. I don't think either one of us thought that it would be that big a deal at the time. But now, in hindsight, I see where it is. So, especially with the leadership change, I do think it is moving in a bit of a different direction. So, what we'd like to do is exactly what Betty has talked about: is a placeholder. You still have the third reading of the budget, so this is not the final blow. So we would come back with a staff position. And then sometime when we, over the course of the next month or so, I'd really like to discuss the staff position and at least have that documentation and discussion on record for the new superintendent coming in.
Okay. Ron leaving has really complicated this because he made the motion. Yeah, it was second. Second,
yeah.
Number. Yeah. Betty. Okay. Okay, well, you're here. Good. I was thinking you'd second it. Okay, great. Okay. And he gave you his proxy. So, do you want to amend his motion? He was zeroing it out, as I understood it.
Yes. And am I not right?
Huh?
I would amend that, and you may have to have me put words.
Reese offered a primary amendment that he would need to restate probably.
Okay, Reese, that's right. Reese?
You okay over here?
Reese?
I'm trying.
Can you offer what you just made as your thoughts as an amendment to the motion?
I would suggest, Don, or what I stated was that I don't know what the implications are for zeroing out that item.
That's an email from Ron.
instead of zeroing out the item, that we simply hold the specific destination or expenditure in abeyance until the matter is further studied and the staff makes a presentation to the board as to the specific duties to be undertaken by this person, whether that's a paralegal or a staff attorney or a general counsel or something else that would serve equally.
Okay, y'all will say
that. We simply ask for additional input on that before the board makes a decision.
Okay, Kathleen, can you craft that into something we'll understand a week from now?
I think so, yes. Between Laura and Betty, we can do that.
Now, one thing I do want to point out to everybody, in addition to that line item we were discussing, we need to also, I mean, it sounds like to me what we're doing is changing that from staff attorney to open position. Mm-hmm. And that's really all we need to amend. Yeah, that's all we're doing. We need to do that on page 11, line item 203-221-110-0006. Bottom grouping, first item in the bottom group on that page.
Page 11.
Staff attorney.
Yeah, 0006.
Oh, I'm on the wrong page. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, staff attorney. So and again, I feel like we're.
So that line item would now look like
it would say
the proposed amendment for
open
this.
Item needs to open position. Okay. Needs to apply to both of those line items. And I'm butchering Robert's rules here to get us where I think we all want to go. Anybody wants to object to what I'm doing, feel free, because I may object myself. Okay, so now, Madam Secretary, would you read the motion?
Well, the original motion made by Dr. Epps, seconded by Ms. Adwood, was to eliminate the line item in question and the amount of money which would fund it. An amendment to that motion has been offered by Mr. Boyd to hold in abeyance both the staff position and the funding amount for further study by staff, who will report back to the board on items which will include but not be limited to specific duties of the position in question. And in order to clarify, Mr. McLaurin has pointed out that on page 11 of 11 of the budget, the line item, which also carries the term staff attorney, will likewise be amended.
Okay, be held in abeyance. Yeah.
The whole.
Now the amendment needs to be seconded.
I second the amendment.
Okay. Anybody want to discuss the amendment?
Please don't make me repeat it.
Okay. All in favor.
Very well done, Kathleen.
Thank you, Reese.
All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Now.
Did you vote, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, all in favor of the motion as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Reese?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. So.
I think we've accomplished.
Yeah, I think we accomplished what everybody set out to accomplish.
If
you would, though, just for clarification, just change those both to open position. Okay. Now, we're still working on the budget.
Right.
Any board member have any other questions, comments, motions? I'd like to put in a salary for the chairman. I'm working too hard here. Yeah.
There are many boards in the state that pay pretty substantially, too.
Okay.
I might add, just as one point we did run across, this little change in the budget is we increased the insurance. One of the things we've looked at, and we've discussed that before, is cyber. Insurance, and that is not cheap. That's $10,000 for us, but I just think any entity now without cyber insurance is just asking for trouble. So
also, kind of in full disclosure, you upped the search amount. Okay, page 2 at the bottom. Yep. Okay. So if anybody...
I understand you're flying in from Canada. It's from Europe.
Yeah. No, we're flying up. We're flying over.
They can't
come here, so you just have to go.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah, we need to put in some for English lessons, too. Okay. Now, then. It appears there's no more discussion. So, all in favor of the motion of the budget as amended for second reading, please say aye.
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 Well, we have to have a motion for second reading first, because all we did was
change right.
The numbers.
You're right. You're exactly
I move
right.
We approve second reading of the budget, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Second. Okay. As amended, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, opposed, no. Okay.
Good job, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You got off easy. Low Country Montessori, Dana.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
You should have in your folder just a summary of the amendment request that's before you for review and action. This is an amendment request from Low Country Montessori Charter School. The principal of that school is in here with an assistant to the school. Laura, and I'm sorry, I cannot commit your last name to me. I apologize. The nature nature of the request is that the school's current charter does not provide for a preschool program. They wish to offer 3 and 4K programs so as to create a grouping for a primary grouping. It would involve kindergarten students and preschoolers, which of course is consistent with the Montessori model. They wish to charge a fee, which would be $5,500 a year for the program. The fee is commensurate with what is being charged by other public preschool programs in the state, including one in our own district. The school was unable to locate a fee-based program, preschool program in the school district in which it's located, Beaufort, or in any neighboring district, and they did provide verification of those efforts. We did receive a legal opinion from council as to whether this would satisfy the statutory requirement. Of course, charter school law does not allow for tuition to be charged by any charter school. It does allow a charter school with approval of its sponsor to charge a fee that is, if it's comparable to the fees that are charged for comparable services in the local school district in which the charter school is located.
And you say you got an opinion on that?
Yes. Well, that would be satisfactory. Okay. That would meet statutory requirement.
Okay. So did I hear a motion?
I move that we approve.
Okay. Second,
moved
Mr. Chairman.
Second. Any discussion?
I think you may have mentioned, but I think their board did approve this to their governing
yes,
board.
Yes, and it's
okay.
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 That resolution was
I have a question of the school. Do y'all have indications that you'll populate this?
Yes.
And it doesn't necessitate any major facility issues, or does it?
We're building a facility right now, and we've designed it with this in mind. Okay. It will be more heavily weighted with kindergartners at first, so that we don't have to fill a lot of those spots. But ideally, in the future, what will happen is we'll have an equal amount of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds in that classroom, because that's what the method in an ideal situation calls for. So.
Okay. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Okay.
Reese, did you chime in on that vote as well?
I was on mute. I'm sorry. Aye.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I lost my agenda.
Superintendent search.
Okay, superintendent search. I will excuse me. Just to give y'all a brief discussion of where we are. We're still posted in a few places, I think, but we've gotten in. I don't know. I've gotten the exact number, and I just flew back in late last night, so I didn't get a chance to see. But around 61, isn't it?
I think it's up to that.
It is.
It's up to
80?
80.
Thereabouts.
It's
between 75 and 80.
Okay.
We've gotten in total.
Okay. So we've gotten lots of response, as you would expect with any position that's advertised. You know, you get a lot that you work through pretty quickly. We are meeting after this meeting. We've gone through all the resumes. Each of us has gone through all the resumes, and we're meeting at this meeting now to decide to start. We've weeded a whole lot out, have begun some telephone interviews, and are now starting discussions of where we go on those. And plus, we've gotten some new ones in since we last had a conference call, and may be end up scheduling some other telephone screens and interviews. But we're making progress. I think it's fair to say that we've worked through a lot of, that's what you have to do in the beginning of a search, is work through a lot of static and get down to what's real. And we're there, and I'm encouraged by the quality. Y'all want to say anything?
No.
Okay. Obviously, we're keeping everything pretty vague because no names get mentioned yet. But any questions? Okay. Then it's moving along. I'm encouraged that we won't have any problem. We set ourselves a deadline of having people to present to the board no later than October, and maybe even earlier to get the decision made by October. So I think we're moving along in that direction. Okay. Superintendent evaluation, Kathleen.
I'll have a written statement to share, but during executive session earlier this morning, the executive committee shared with other board members the results of Wayne's evaluation. In a nutshell, it was glowing from start to finish, top to bottom, side to side. We thank you, Wayne, obviously, for your great work, for bringing us to where we are now. The numbers look like this. In every instance, the scores fell within the excellent range, which is from 8 to 10. There was one perfect 10, board relations, a couple of 8.5s, and the remaining scores were 9.5, making the overall ranking, where did I put that? This piece of paper. I think it was 9.4 or 9.5. I apologize.
Yeah, it was up there somewhere.
And comments were very telling. Wayne has built a focused and effective staff. He keeps us all on the same page, which isn't an easy job to do. Wayne will be hard to replace. He has done a great job leading the district and putting together a staff that can lead us to the future. So I think he's looking to the future as much as we are. It'll be different for us here around the table, certainly. But you'll be sorely missed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And any other board members would like to chime in?
Or Wayne respond? We have in this document past 5 years. Is that the right number of
Thank
years?
Thank you. We could.
6 years.
That's what I thought. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
I got it.
That's better than putting 8, right?
Yes. Can you believe we've been together?
I know it.
Board chair, superintendent for 6 years.
Yeah, I know
can
it.
You believe?
Yeah.
It does scoop by quickly, doesn't it?
It does. It does. But yeah, on behalf of the whole board, an evaluation that comes in at 9.5 overall is obviously a tremendous vote of confidence from this board and what you've done, and we appreciate all you've done.
I'd just like to say this has been an unbelievable way to finish out my formal career. I plan to stay active. Betty has been a model for me now. I've seen there is additional life after the superintendency. I want to do that. I do believe in what we're trying to do. And as I told Don, up until the last day I'm here, I will work just like I'm going to be here for the next 10 years. So I'm delighted that with the quality of applicants and just from the few people that have contacted me and I've sent them to Don, I'm just amazed, and I think it speaks well for the position we put us in through the board and the staff we've developed here. So it's exciting, and I look forward to seeing where the district's going to go at the next level.
Well, one of the things that was discussed amongst the board that I think just really needs to be amplified is that the district had a credibility problem 6 years ago, and if you had done nothing else, you did. But if you had not, but get that squared away to where, as Ron was pointing out, he and I had our confirmation hearings on the same morning, and there was no. The tone of the questions and the comments that came from the senators, we no longer felt like we were defending something that was in question. The credibility is there, and in fact, you were brought up. They were telling us that you know, obviously they know you're retiring and all, and giving us some instructions about how we might go about trying to find someone else who worked with them as well as you have. And so I think if nothing else has been accomplished, that is huge, because if you don't have credibility amongst them and the other educators, then you're just not going to survive.
Dead in the water.
Yeah, you're dead in the water. And so, thanks. Okay, performance framework. Dana.
And Bobby.
What Bob and I thought we would do for you all this morning is I'm going to provide a context for the performance framework. Obviously, talk a little bit about the purpose, the goals that we set for it. We'll touch upon kind of the evolution of it. And this is the pilot year, so we wanted to share with you the 2013-2014 summary for all of our schools. And we'll talk about next steps and lessons learned, and then interwoven that with Bobby's review of the specific data across the our school portfolio.
While we're waiting, though, I thought you might be interested in this. I'll conclude my report. And these are the 21 schools that have submitted letters of intent now.
Oh, my goodness. 21.
One has indicated to me that they're going to pull out and come in February, but they haven't officially done that yet, and that's the lab school.
That's the one who's been in and out of the water three or four times with us?
That's right. Okay. It's Learning Academy.
That's right, yeah.
While we've got a break, there was one thing I'm going to bring up, and since everybody isn't here, I'll also send this out, but when I send it out, at least with the people in here, you'll know why. Either in our policy statements or the law, or maybe both, it says that if board members are going to be absent from meetings, that they need to notify the chairman, and then it's up to the chairman to decide whether it is a excused absence or not. And we haven't been following that. That's my fault because I've never brought it up. But I'm going to send something out and ask everybody if you're going to miss. Because what happens is they report to the staff and they're not here. I'm trying to keep up with attendance and their rules about attendance and everything. And it kind of makes it very difficult for me then to evaluate later should that have been excused. And so I'm going to send something out to everybody and make sure we start following that procedure.
And I'll talk a little bit about these when doing my report.
Five on this list that have come before us? Four? Plus labs?
Five?
Berkeley Pines, Bettis,
Berkeley Pines,
Tall Pines, and Birches.
exactly right.
Okay, Tall Pines.
Last one, Virtus.
I don't remember. Oh, Florence. Yeah.
Oceanside Collegiate.
That one I don't remember.
How can you forget that one? That's the one with two businesses.
Oh, those are two guys sit there and talk to each other?
Yeah.
I'll mention them when we get there.
Everyone okay with dimming the lights? You can see this a little bit.
Yeah, we'll probably go to sleep.
Here, have some chocolate. Get some coffee.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I'll take the chocolate.
Help yourself.
I think I had sent it a couple weeks ago.
Okay. All right, so as a refresher, the purpose of the performance framework is we wanted to make sure to set academic, fiscal, and organizational standards by which all of the charter schools that you authorize will be evaluated. It provides us as a means to inform you as our board and a wide array of stakeholders. We're talking school leaders, school boards, school communities, parents, legislators of each school's performance and sustainability. It does enable us to take multiple factors into account when we're evaluating our schools, when we're wanting to know where do we need to put technical assistance, what kind of technical assistance provide, what kind of oversight should we provide, how frequently, and then, of course, making critical recommendations to you as our high-stakes decision-makers regarding renewal, non-renewal, and revocation. It also helps us to fulfill all those statutory obligations that are outlined in our charter school law, monitor school performance and legal and fiscal compliance, collect and analyze data to support ongoing evaluation, notify schools of their performance, compliance issues, deficiencies, and then take appropriate action, whether that be putting a school under corrective action plan or exercising sanctions short of revocation in response to the school's performance and compliance. Our objectives as the staff for the performance framework was to clearly communicate the standards and expectations for our schools. We wanted to foster a dynamic process that is subject to continuous review and improvement. Provide schools with the data they need to manage their own performance. We don't want to have to manage it for them. I know schools prefer to manage this on their own, and this is part of their autonomy. Conduct a transparent, consistent, and predictable oversight process. And that oversight process needs to be consistent and with the school's autonomy and respectful of that autonomy. We wanted to focus on outcomes, not inputs. The school gets to choose, once again, with their autonomy, the inputs. The outcomes are what we're focusing on, the accountability. Provide fact-based and timely feedback, indicating to schools where do they stand relative to each other, relative to the framework standards and the expectations. And then, of course, at the end of the day, differentiate oversight. The high flyers, the schools that you'll see that are consistently scoring well across the key indicators of academics, finance, and organization, would not get the same level of scrutiny. And one of the rewards, we don't do financial rewards, but a huge reward to our schools is that we don't get in the weeds. We'd love to do a tour of your school, but we're not gonna do this comprehensive visit and drill down and find out how do you do everything. We'd love to see their practices and share best practices and actually use them as models and for them to help guide other schools if at all possible. Again, three guiding questions you all might recall. Academic, from an academic standpoint, is the education program successful? From a financial standpoint, is the school financially viable, solvent, is it sustainable? And then organizationally, is the organization effective and well-run? Not just in terms of the building level leader, but of course, taking into account how governance and how the EMO is being held accountable if an EMO is involved. For academics, the indicators involve proficiency in ELA and math. You can see, I won't go through all of those. Graduation rate, life scholarship eligibility, and certain targets. And then meeting the targets that the schools have outlined in the charter. And we are using the annual report that each charter school in the state has to submit to its authorizer and the State Department of Ed to give us a data source for determining whether they're meeting their individualized goals.
Dana, go ahead. Do the schools comply with that annual report getting it in?
Yes, we have not had any problem. And this year we made it easier. We used Epicenter, which they could send it to us electronically, and it was set up, and they got the reminder. So we've not had any problem.
Betty had a question.
Oh, sure.
Going back to the academic, since the profile of the South Carolina graduate has been adopted by the Education Oversight Committee, the State Department of Education, and numerous of other organizations, I don't know if this is the appropriate place or time to discuss that, but it seems as if it should be part of our terminology, too.
Sure. I totally agree with that. And I want to emphasize, and when we cover that slide about lessons learned, from the outset, we've told schools this is dynamic and fluid. I mean, when we started the process, we had HSAP. You know, we had that in, and that was one of the indicators that we handed them on because of the time frame. But we said we know things are subject to change, terminology, and then, of course, data sources. So we definitely will be having that conversation. We're planning a retreat for the performance framework. We will get the stakeholder group, you know, Dr. Daniels here from SC Virtual is part of that, together, so we can make sure that it is very reflective of the best practices and current practices in the language that's being used.
And we have shared that with the leaders, too.
From a financial standpoint, looking at near-term and sustainability, you'll see the indicators there. And, of course, our finance director and our finance analyst could answer questions regarding that. I'm certainly probably the least experienced person on staff with finances with that part of the framework. But I cannot tell you the value it's added. When you see the data that we actually know where the trouble spots are, and we can have these high-level conversations, Tasha, I should say, and Bobby can, with the schools about how they are progressing or where they're having difficulty. And then looking at the budget overall and seeing how it's potentially impacting academic performance and organizational performance. And then from an organizational standpoint, we're looking at educational program, the mission, fidelity to that, access and equity. I can't prioritize that enough, just on a personal level and as an organizational level, how huge that is in terms of questions that are asked about how accessible are our schools as charter schools to all children. You know, charter school law is very clear. All schools, all students eligible to attend public schools, South Carolina, get to attend public schools. So looking at things like enrollment procedures, looking at the racial composition, those are huge things. And I do think a little later I'll talk about critical indicators as a next step. We can't obviously count everything, and some indicators are more important. Even though they're all important, everything in the framework is important. We wouldn't have put it there. But some are more critical than others. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure that students' interests are being protected and the public interests is being protected. So when I think of a critical indicator, this is just one that stands out, equity. You know, that's first and foremost. If a child cannot even enter the charter school world, then everything else becomes a moot point. Governance, school environment, it gets to safety, health, facilities, students and employees' rights, management and oversight, again, leadership at the building level, but also at the board level, and EMO, and then reporting requirements. Okay. So I'm going to turn this over to Bobby right now to go over evaluation by component, and then I'll pick back up, and we won't keep you terribly long and separate you any further from lunch.
Okay, in your handout, you've got these charts. The first few, essentially what we're doing is we're looking at all of the indicators across the section. So you've got three different pages like this. The first one is the academic component. And so what we're doing is we're summarizing for all of the indicators for each school, the number of indicators that each school met by that components of the academic component here versus the organizational financial. And then what we're doing is we're triaging the percentage of indicators that the school met. So looking at the ones that met the least indicators and triaging services, and then backtracking from the summative data to go back into the actual indicators by that component. So like Dana mentioned, for the financial, is it cash on hand that's one of the indicators that's being missed, or, you know, debt default or something like that. So triaging services this way, looking at how we partner with schools technical assistance-wise, professional development, and then with follow-up, because like the financial piece is using the audited financial statements from last year, so that's a snapshot. So what we want to see is if, for example, cash on hand or the level of debt to assets, we want to see improvement trends, so we want to see that cash reserves are improving. So this gives us a way to look at that. Does anybody have any questions? There's three of those, one by each of the components.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Sure.
We've got four schools that have met none of their indicators on academic.
That's correct. I don't do the academic component, but one thing to keep in mind with this piece is the academic components are not static like the others are. There's eight indicators. Some of these based on the report card, if they don't have middle school or high school grades served, might have less indicators. So that comes into play with this also. But based on the input for these indicators in the academic area, yeah, there's those schools that did not meet any of their indicators.
Did you have a question?
Well, and it's on this... where on the lines that you're talking, that, you know, is there a threshold that you start gathering this data and you're seeing, you know, results? What's going to be acceptable? What's going to be, okay, you know, we may have to pull a charter.
Sure. And you have known from just those four schools, imagine we have had lots of conversations about there are non-compliant status. We've met with them a number of times. We're tracking they're tracking interim assessment data for us, but we're also tracking it, and we're having conversations. And they've met with us on a number of occasions to talk about it. Where do they think they move? They know that at some point, if things do not improve, that it's likely that we would recommend to you all revocation. There's a number of things that the board, we actually went to the board. Courtney, Bobby, and me. We went to the board to talk to them about their academic profile, and made sure it was crystal clear. And we've done two comprehensive site visits with them as well. When we met with them on the second visit, it was very clear that the board did not seem to appreciate the significance of the academic accountability data, and that's huge. Even the board chair, who is an educator. So, you know, obviously they are having some too much distance from the school performance. You know, everyone gets along and they think they're great board. So, but there's also an EMO involved. And they are talking about, you know, thinking outside the box, I'll say, in terms of what they can do. They've actually started conversations about do they need to eliminate some grades and really just keep the early grades and focus on that. They have made some major changes in terms of their teacher organizational structure, in terms of letting some folks go, obviously having to get much more sophisticated in drilling down with their own data, and they're doing tons of assessments. Maybe it's overkill, actually. But it is rich in assessment information, and they do have their fingers on the pulse of each of the students now. It may be too late. You know, maybe a little too... you know, too late. I don't know yet. But we will be going back and visiting before the end of the year and coming back with you at some point during the summer to have this conversation.
Yeah. Let me just mention one other, too. Cyber Academy was their first year last year. And you remember, they were a school designed to be a virtual school for more at-risk students. Well, this year, they've added a tutoring component, and I've been up twice to see that component. So that's what you want to see. You want to see a school that's having some problems, and then what are you doing to address it? And their tutoring program, they're expanding statewide. So I do think they're trying to address the needs there. PD Math and Science has done the same thing. When you visit there, you can see there's an instructionally different air about the school right now. So what worries you is when you have a school who just says, you know, we're doing everything we can. I can't think of anything else I'd want to do. That's when you start worrying. But it and
have you
the
heard anyone say that?
Well, I think you saw Dana mention Imagine. Imagine's been a school that we felt like has not responded well until this year at all. They're in their third year now, and they always had a number of excuses. They do have a large number of it's a high poverty school in an area where they have a lot of at-risk students, but we don't feel like they have met their obligation to keep their charter relative to make any kind of improvements we'd like to see at the school. So I would say they're on the bubble for sure, and they understand that, that they're on the bubble.
And I want to add that it really took us adopting the performance framework, which is a best practice, no doubt, best practice for quality authorizing, for us to have internally the high-level conversations we've been needing to have about performance. You know, it's in isolation, I think, as a staff, we'll know that, well, this school causes me concerns as a compliance director, let's say, or a former compliance director, or someone across the organization. The creation of a performance management division has helped us bring all this data together and coalesce around the performance and have those conversations where we actually meet as a group of individuals. Just last week, Tosh is our finance director and William as information technology director and I met to go over a lot of data across the organization, and we're doing things more in team fashion. And this is just powerful data. And when a school sees its performance compared to others across the school portfolio, it makes that conversation richer. And I will say that, you know, heretofore, we knew a bad school when we saw it, and that obviously is not adequate. It needs to be crystal clear when we come to you and recommend you consider revocation or renewal. You have a very strong academic, fiscal, and organizational record to support that. And there's just and there's been the conversations, and no school, my goal is for no school to ever say, they could still say it, but they should never be able to justify saying, we didn't know this was coming. Right. We didn't know we were heading in this direction.
And how often is this data shared with the schools?
Well, right now, what we've been doing, this is our first our pilot year, is we've been sharing data with the schools that you see in the red, having those conversations across the indicators. And not to the same level that we're having the conversation with Imagine, but I can tell you that we've had a lot of conversations with Calvert, Royal Live Oaks. Calvert is receiving a comprehensive site visit. Royal Live Oaks just received one last month.
But the data is shared with everybody, I assume?
The data, we wanted to give you, this is the summary for the year.
Right.
We wanted to present this to you first. Next week this summary will go to each school leader for its school and each board chair.
How often can you update this?
We can update it throughout the school year. More so with the finance information and some organizational academics, it's obviously harder because of the... We are using interim assessment data for those schools that are at risk. We are having them provide... Right now, all of our schools are providing us interim assessment data. Are we looking at every school, 31 schools, interim assessment data? No, we're zeroing in on those that you see in the red. Okay. You can see that they're trending in the right direction.
Okay. And how often?
Dana, this is Reese, if I can ask a question.
Sure.
I see two matrices, or however you want to describe it, two documents that were emailed. One is financial, one says organizational performance. And if you answered this, I apologize. But on the organizational, I see three rows on page one where you have scored. Most are green. There are a couple of zeros.
Reason
a lot of dashes.
Sure,
why are there so many blanks without scores?
Because we have intentionally implemented, and there's a slide further down. We might could go to it, Bob, if you don't mind. The evolution process for the organization component is very unique in that there are as a practical matter, we can't specifically address every possible compliance requirement that attaches itself to a charter school. There were so many indicators that we and our stakeholder group agreed we need to be tracking. However, as an organization, we did not have, we had not specified or identified data sources, right? So we have just in January started a monthly performance framework calendar. We'll probably go to quarterly. Something I've talked to staff about is doing quarterly compliance check-ins. But we've had to be very intentional about taking an incremental approach to organizational framework because we, the schools, and us as the authorizer have to put some necessary systems in place for data collection. We've identified requirements that are more challenging to the schools than others, and we want to balance the school's compliance with their ability to continue to fulfill their primary purpose, which of course is to educate children. So there's a lot of burden that gets attached to the compliance checking. For instance, we were able to report out with Paula Gray's help as our human resources director that background checks are being done. We have the HQ data. The State Department of Ed provides that to us. We have a sense of some of the other indicators, but then there are others that we just have never really been very systematic about collecting. And guidance out there, and NACSA puts this forward, but other just having conversations with authorizers around the country, the organization component is the hardest one to get your heads and arms around because there's so many moving parts, and it's an either you do it or you don't. But we've had to have a lot of conversations with our school leaders about what's fair. If as the assistant superintendent of performance standards issues a letter, one letter of caution, let's say for regarding students with disabilities, and that's done in January, and the performance summary comes out, let's say February or March, they've corrected that. Do they meet standard? Well, they weren't meeting standard at that point in time, but we know that they've corrected it since that time, and actually the rest of the year looks great. We are having conversations about what does meeting standard for that type of indicator mean? Does it mean you did not get a letter of caution at all for the year? Does it mean you got a letter but you corrected it? Does it mean that you got a letter and you're in the process of correcting it and we see improvement but you're not there yet? I mean, there's so many ways to approach it, and we will have another stakeholder group to kind of reach some consensus about that, but it was okay for us to say we don't know for those indicators, rather than go ahead and say to a school now, you met the standard, and then next year they don't, and then having to explain what was different from the data collection from 1 year to the next. So in fairness to the schools, we wanted to make sure that we were only holding them accountable for things that they knew we were counting, and we had the data to support it. Because what we are asking schools to do when they get this in their hands is to have the conversation with us about their performance.
So, and I'm looking, and that makes perfect sense. So I'm assuming if there's a dash, we either don't have data, or we don't have a methodology, or the school doesn't know we're tracking it.
Sure. Now, just a quick example, 10A, admissions enrollment practices. The schools, all charter schools, are required by law to submit those 60 days, I think, before their enrollment period begins. We have that. We have to organize ourselves in a way to say who's going to put their eyes on it, how are we going to evaluate that. And again, keep in mind, looking at just a procedure that they submit and saying, well, on its face, it looks fine. We could have said, you know, to all of our schools, on their face, it looks fine. And they meet standard, but we know we're going to have to drill a little deeper because we get stakeholder complaints about access and denial of, you know, entry into schools. We have this racial composition data that we need to do something with. So rather than going ahead and saying everyone met that standard, we're just saying we don't know yet.
Okay. All right.
Thanks. One thing here, on the organizational performance. I do see 11B, holding management accountable, and I see 11A, complying with governance requirements. Not right now, but at some point, maybe next meeting or something, or even send it out, doesn't have to be at a meeting. I would be interested in how you determine whether they're complying with. And maybe there's a difference between governance requirements
and good governance.
And good governance.
Yes, there is. And you know, one thing.
And how do you do that? Yes. I don't know how, but it is vital that we be able to do
that. Yes, and I will say, though, that, and we have a lot of conversation with other authorizers, our stakeholder group, and NACSA about that, to make sure best practices is not what a performance framework is tracking.
Right.
You know, we know best practices work, and we'd love for all our schools to adopt them. At the end of the day, if they're still getting a positive outcome, if they've not, I mean, it'd be strange to think of that happening, but it could. We're not going to focus on the inputs. We're going to focus on the outcomes.
Absolutely.
But having said that, there is a lot to be said about when you look at minutes, what are the schools, what are the boards talking about? You know, are they actually receiving information about their financial situation every board meeting? Does the principal actually talk and share information about the performance of the students? Is there, and one of the indicators is holding school management accountable. We know it's that each school is supposed to be, and board is supposed to be holding their principal accountable. Do we have never set anything up in place to ask each school for a copy? We don't, you know, a copy or just verify the date that you issued a evaluation for your principal. The same, we know they need to be holding their EMO accountable. We don't have, but we'd have to scour the minutes to look for that. So Eric and I actually had a very good conversation. He made a wonderful suggestion about a way to do that. We had the opportunity to, Dr. Brian Carpenter, who you all know, is working with one of our schools and was came to a staff meeting the other day, just dropped by, and he had some great, he's going to actually provide some free technical assistance to our staff as to how to read minutes. Like, what do you look for? We have a rubric, but it would be great to be more purposeful about that. So looking at minutes, Don, looking at attendance, looking at the agendas to see what's being talked about, what information is being shared. I mean, we were surprised that a school that's performing very low was not sharing a lot of detail with their board, and the board wasn't asking for it. And having had that conversation, I think, has helped. Does that address?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, I know how hard that is to measure.
Yes. And I hate that even, I have to tell you, we were really torn about even reporting out, because I know the two schools, if there were more than one, it might be more than one, it might just be one, that was only one letter of caution issue regarding that, because it is really a hard thing to track, and that school is going to see that it was the one teased out and everyone else. Could I sit here and say, honestly, every school is compliant with FOIA? I couldn't say that right now. Can I say that they're good governance? No. So that is one that we're going to really have to work on this year, and yeah. I beef up support around it in terms of having more eyes on it and just being strategic about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all know that whether it's academics or finance, what other area you're measuring, when those things are bad, what I was looking at is...
Yeah, taking those low-performing academics.
Well, what I was looking at is if you look at organizational component, the scores are really, really good, I mean, compared to the others.
Yeah.
But that can't be true.
No,
it simply can't be true that the performance is that good in that and it's this poor in this. So and I understand. That's not a criticism.
No, I know.
But what I'm saying is that I understand how hard that is to measure, and I think.
And I will say that in part supports the earlier conversation and Wayne's thought process behind hiring someone else to support the authorizing. It's we have to have more eyes, and I don't mean we need a ton of more people. We have to be more strategic about the things that count. But governance, I mean, we recently, and we do have a chair of our board from Bridges here in the audience. We recently had, I thought, a very, very productive conversation with that board. We took that approach to go in person and address a lot of compliance issues from a governance standpoint that were being raised with us. So that was one way to do it. 31, 33 schools, we need to have high-level conversations with all of them. How
how we go about getting this to a point where at the end of the day I feel good to come before you and say, you know what, we only have four schools that are really struggling in the governance area. That's where I want to get. I want us to get that sophisticated with the data collection there.
Yeah, and I'm even thinking that sometime when we're in a workshop mode, this wouldn't be a bad, I think this board has a lot of collective knowledge about governance. And we don't want to get in to y'all's jobs. Now, you know I protect that. But that might not be a bad place for a workshop sometime between the staff and to get, because is the board chair in some of these schools or board members trying to micromanage the school? Or are they showing up as individuals and having conversations about what to do and what not to do with the heads of school or other
sure.
people there?
Yes.
Well, if that's going on, they should not get a good grade. And I know it's going on places. And so,
and then we've had to also...
we got to figure out how to... But how do you...
Yeah.
So I think we could get... In governance, here's what can happen. Boy, I know some people are probably going to think this is crazy. You can try too hard to quantify things and say, we can't talk about them unless we can quantify them. There's a famous Supreme Court decision about pornography where the justice writing the opinion said, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it. Well, the same thing applies to governance and management. I mean, that's the only area we ever talk about that I know anything about is that. And if your antenna are attuned, you can, by golly, spot bad governance. And it's very difficult to quantify, but it is not difficult to spot. And so I think we could worry too much about, putting this in quotation marks, fairness. I mean, there's just some things that...
I will say that, again, keep in mind, this is a year out. This was 2013, 2014.
Yeah,
so we have had a lot more conversations with boards since then, and the result for this year would be different from last year.
Okay.
Also, something that we've spoken about as a staff is creating a strand in terms of professional development. So we bring leaders in for that. In my opinion, we have to have that strand for the governing board. So Wayne and I have met with some great people that can do that kind of thing. Our board chairs, two of them, and we have another board chair, Mike Arena from Provost here, to be able to get some training too that we're doing that we're providing to them, and we're modeling kind of the way for good governance, and pulling you all in to help with that too is a great.
I would just like for us all to think about how do you go about evaluating that and measuring to the extent you can, but it's not a quantifiable thing.
No, it's not, and I don't feel like just to be able to say that a school provided a copy of all of the minutes are on their website, all the agendas, look like they had any FOIA issues, doesn't make me feel that it's good to say they're meeting standard. I know that.
It means it's almost nothing.
But from a compliance standpoint,
I understand. I'm not saying don't measure, but what I'm saying, you can check off all the boxes and be terribly managed and have done everything.
I'll tell you, this is the least pleasant part of the
process. Oh, no, I know that.
And it's not just for me personally. I think the staff would agree, but it's also across authorizers.
And
you've heard that, obviously, at the next.
Well, it's hard to do.
It is.
It's really hard to do.
Well, even the financial components that you would think would be very static and just pulling a number, and it's running these ratios like you would see in a private sector business, there's still circumstantial information, sometimes or contextual information when talking to schools. I guess what I'm really excited about is my first year in dealing with this piece is a conversation piece to have with the schools, and I think it's a shared goal, and it gives them what I call the rules of the game. The school leaders know how we're looking at them, and then we can start working with them.
I tell you one thing that's just as we're discussing has come to my mind. That I don't even know if we got the right to do. But if we do, and I know it'd be time consuming, especially to go to more schools, but I think an annual, maybe more often than that, meeting with some knowledgeable person from the staff, and somebody from the staff who's got real good judgment and discernment, and I don't mean some do and some don't, but some people are good at this. Nothing more than going to lunch with the head of school and the chairman of the board. I know I could go to lunch with the head of school and chairman of the board, and I could have a two-hour lunch with them, and I could come away having a pretty doggone good idea of how that relationship's going. And so it may be something as informal as that.
Believe me, there are so many red flags that pop up.
Oh,
I think I put in my update, I met with a school that's coming on board, and they just called me in and asked if I'd come up and meet with them. I went up and met with them, and they said, you know, we signed our contract with our EMO, and we didn't realize what was in it. Now we, and I said, you know, you signed a contract, and now you're having, now you really take the time to read it,
yeah.
And we don't agree with it. Is there anything we can do? So call your attorney.
Right. Yeah.
The advanced ed probably could give some guidance with governance, because they have a
They have rubric.
Yeah, they have a huge component, you know, with the governance that they work through.
It's a great idea, Betty. I do have some that I've pulled from other authorizers that do feel that they're getting a handle on governance. Mm-hmm. That I would love, maybe we can put that on an agenda just to share that with you.
That'd
all
be right.
And see how you feel about it. I'd love to show you those questions. I think it's very thoughtful, and I'll pull the advanced ed.
Betty, I mean, you teach me a lot about the school world versus my world. Is what I'm saying, is it not make sense?
No, you're on the mark. You can do the checkoff and look from an outside like this is wonderful, but there's no substance.
Okay, we got some school people over here.
You're right, Dr. Babby. That's true. Checkoffs in the world, I didn't mean they're operating.
We got two board chairmen, is that right? Yeah.
Three.
Well, no.
Jerry, right.
Mike and
Dave. Yeah, right. I thought maybe Jerry had a role I didn't know about. But do y'all agree with what I'm saying? That this is critical and hard to do, to quantify, to do it in numbers. I mean, you know, you're a 8.3. I don't know how you do that.
Advanced Ed does have an excellent
rubric,
and also, we're going through Advanced Ed right now, so they do have an excellent component above governance.
Right. That's great. That's good. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to tell you, but
it's good, really important conversation. Thank you.
Okay. And one of the things we did, the schools came in to help us put this together. And we told them that this was the first year we're doing it, and we weren't going to beat them up with it, and we would refine this. But I got to tell you, we're heading toward really collecting some good data, and there should be some. There shouldn't ever be a closure of a school right now that you can't back up 100% with good data, and that's where I think we'll be in the future.
Right.
Well, that's just the last one. I think for the financials, a little bit easier with some of this. Just again, tracking the numbers and then identifying the problem areas and then starting to work with the schools in those areas, seeing what the big problems are. And we're kind of learning as we go with some of this stuff, because as you have conversations with the school, there'll be a situation that it changes how we look at this. So almost reverse engineering, that there's other things to be looked at, just like you said, the organizational, while still trying to remain consistent among the evaluation of schools.
Okay.
And I think that's everything, Dan, unless you've got anything.
I think I've already spoken about the evolution process. Next steps, we will be presenting the summary to the school leader and board, hoping to get that out with the cover letter next week. We will just continue to have, we'll want to tease out those critical indicators, flesh out the data resources for those organizational indicators, and reach consensus on what does it mean to meet standard. And obviously continue to gather and use feedback from our schools and other stakeholders. One thing I know we've been very purposeful of doing is messaging across the organization. but we have to focus. We've got so many things. You can get, you know, thank you. You come into work and there's lots of fires to put out and everything. Just trying to bring it all back to center. What matters most to be counting?
Right.
The students, obviously, right. And then the public's interest. And the framework does it a great job of that for us. It really should be simplifying everyone's jobs. Mm-hmm. It should, if it's creating more work, it may on the front end just because we have to organize ourselves around it. But in the long run, it should save us a lot of time, make us more efficient and data-driven, which is what we want to model for our schools.
Right.
So thank you all for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you all.
Bobby, and Bobby's just added so much value to this, and we'd not be doing this without him.
Struggle so, getting the password and the PowerPoint. Yeah, that. He's going to
have to improve in that area. So
thank you,
Mr.
Okay, I'm going to suggest, since it's, 12:30, that we get lunch and get your report.
Over lunch.
We can do that. Yeah, we can just do that after we get back for lunch. Is that okay with everybody? You gave me this, but don't you sign it?
Yeah. Oh, and Donna,
okay.
The, for tomorrow night, we're giving out certificates. Okay.